to another episode of Diversity on Fire. This is your host, Heather. The goal with Diversity on Fire is to inspire you to think more deeply and act with more knowledge and compassion. We'll do this by sharing our conversations on all types of diversity-related topics. Joining me today is Margaret O'Connor. Margaret has been called the modern-day David. She's on a mission to reveal carefully guarded secrets of the Catholic Church. This is all fueled by her own experience of being silenced and ignored, and she has now become a published author in her book, Scandal in the Shadows, revealing her true story and uncovering inconvenient truths that the church would rather remain hidden. Welcome to the show, Margaret.
Oh, Heather, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm happy to have you, and I look forward to this conversation. Before we start talking kind of in depth and touching on the book and the things that you've researched and found, I'd love it if you would introduce yourself to me and the audience on a more personal level. So if you can get started by telling us, you know, where you grew up, cultural background, family dynamics, hobbies as a person, that type of stuff.
Sure. I grew up and lived all my life in Buffalo, New York. And I do come from an Irish Catholic family. And from the time we were little, the church definitely played a big part in our lives. And as I go on further, I just want the audience to know that, the listeners rather, that everything I'm saying is factual. And at first, you are going to hear information probably you've never heard before. But the whole reason for writing a book like this is that I feel really any woman in the Catholic Church, man also, deserves at minimal at least the truth. And what do I mean by that? I mean that from the time I was little in the 50s, I was told, look it, there never were woman priest in our church. So, of course, as a little child, you know, you take that all in and you dare not question that. Well, throughout my life and then even into the 20s, I would call it rumors that I kept hearing that there were woman priests. So, of course, I would ask basically any priest I saw, you know, and no, ma'am or miss, this only men. So by the time I got to midlife, I guess it was just the curiosity really got to me. How can I find this out? So at that time, I was more into my religious studies and I was working on my pastoral ministry degree. And I thought, well, they have a wonderful research library. But of course, I was very naive because this information wouldn't be there. The information that I'm going to be talking about, you're thinking, well, gee, I've read the Bible. I don't remember anything about woman priests, let alone bishops, deacons. This comes from biblical research. And it's not only coming from like a Catholic priest, sisters. It comes as well from Protestant ministers. But again, everything is the truth. So I want you all to be sure you're seated, because one of my biggest finds on this journey, a journey initially to find out, hopefully, was there ever a woman priest? Mary, Mother of God, Jesus's mother, was a woman priest. And many of you are thinking, what is this lady talking about? I don't remember hearing anything about Mary's ordination. Well, if you go back into, again, this biblical research, Mary, Mother of God, received the same anointing as Jesus did at the conception. So she is really the second priest after Jesus Christ. And Hebrews 7:26 says, isn't it fitting that we have such a high priest? So Mary indeed was a priestly woman. And at first, I know it's hard probably to wrap your head around this, because we've always seen Mary as someone that is very perfect, you know, the best of everything. And it really, that was one of the things as I was growing up, as I got older. I mean, I never can be like Mary. You know what I mean? I'm human. And that in a way bothered me that she was so perfect, because no, not that what she did was wonderful, but for like an average person, maybe going to aspire to something like this, it wouldn't be the easiest thing. But her whole image, in a sense, they've done, Elizabeth Johnson did a wonderful book on this. She's a sister as well. And we think of Mary more like some type of a beauty queen. And yet Mary lived with Joseph, and they were just average people. They didn't have money, so they were, in a sense, very poor, and that just even making a regular meal was a task. Going out, Mary would have had to go out and get the jugs of water and bring them back. So, yes, I think it's fascinating now. We know Mary was a priest. She was really like an everyday woman. She certainly knew the toils of that time, the physical work, the hardships, and what a better background to have in her own ministry.
So I want to go back a little bit, because when we're talking about this, I know that, and you touched on it a little bit, is kind of part of your journey of kind of realizing you had some things going on that were being ignored. And when finally someone paid attention the way they should have for a very long time, it seems like that almost triggered you to dig deeper into some of these other things and maybe look for things that were hidden elsewhere. Can you tell us personally about that story a little bit? You were dealing with an autoimmune condition.
I went 20 years undiagnosed with celiac disease, and I do have a new book out now on that. But what happened was, basically, when I finally received a diagnosis, I was within 6 months, my doctor said, of being 6 feet down in my grave. Well, that's very disarming, to say the least. And that means I literally was giving a second chance at life. And the last 5 years, it was just like almost complete exhaustion. I lost so much weight. You were constantly sick after every meal. You were tired. You had bone pain. And I thought, gee, this must be what it's like. I mean, I'm going to be dying. I was really resigned to that. And then all of a sudden, to have like a sunshine, you know what I mean? Get your health back. It's like anything. We take everything, I think most of us do anyway, for granted. And it was like looking at life completely different. I finally got my health back to a certain extent. I'm still a shadow of myself, of what I used to be. But I mean, thank God, at least I you know, I'm not in that pain anymore. But looking at life in this extra time that I have, it almost, in a sense, like sparked a type of urgency that you see things and you see they should be changed, and even take it a step further, like what personally might that mean in my own faith life, but then as well for any other woman, you know, in their individual faith lives. And you're really, in a sense, there was like a call to action. And let's face it, we're not here forever. And if you look at the priest woman's issue, they've been talking about this. Well, I was young, youngster back in the 50s. So, and what? Where are we now? You know, nothing has happened.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your experience and your education on this topic. So I know when you were writing the book, it was, you know, you did a lot of research and you referenced other texts that you had gotten information from. But how would you describe your experience and education when you're talking about this topic?
I received a master's in pastoral ministry, and I am a former chaplain. But it was the books that I came upon that dealt specifically with biblical research. And I will say they were the gold mines. And the one in particular, this is a former Catholic priest over in London, John Vingegaard's The Ordination of Woman in the Catholic Church. And he's the one that has chapters in there on Mary, Mother of God. And by the way, Mary, Mother of God, her name, she was called Mary Priest. And now listen to this one. Her title was the model for all priesthood in the Catholic Church. In other words, the priests would pray to her for their success. And I mean, isn't that ironic today when, you know, the church won't even look at this issue of women's, you know, equality. And here Mary had that position.
What?
That position. Oh.
No, go ahead.
That position was taken away from her, believe it or not, not too long ago. I mean, in 2000 years of history, 1926-27, the church hierarchy took that title away from her. And John Vingegaard was curious too. I mean, what is so special about those years? Well, it was at that same time, Heather, that you had women from other faith denominations. They were coming out, and as well, they were asking to become woman priests. So this is all, I'm surmising this on my part. Well, if we obviously get this title away from Mary, and we put it to sleep, is basically this Roman official. This really offended me. He's talking to the newspaper man that ran a little article about this. And he's saying, isn't it well what you did that you put this question to sleep? And I'm thinking, you're talking about Mother Mary? You're referring to her like an object, a question? And go back to 1903, Pope Leo XIII, he received a painting and it was allowed to have a portrait of Mary in priestly vestments hung up, you know, on the wall. Well, then you see things changing. In 1913, that no longer was allowed.
I'm curious, did you identify in your research, or do you have an opinion of what the silencing of women is? Is it for power purposes? Is it for control? Why would that be such a necessity to erase that history?
Because then these women were coming out of the woodwork from other denominations. And if any Catholic woman realized that Mary was a priest, because still at that time, I marvel, my mother, my grandmother were alive back in the 20s. And they, of course, didn't hear a peep of that, you know, of this article. But this whole issue, I wondered as well when I was, you know, getting into this, why from the beginning, what happened that women were put down? And you go way, way back. Rome actually was the one that started the laws, like civil laws. And unfortunately, they were very demeaning to like an average woman. Well, you had Roman theologians that are living in the same culture, they actually took and shaped that law into church law. So right there, I mean, that's when it all began. But the particulars are, this is what the men used in their reasoning to put women down, that they were inferior, they were sinners, they were unclean. I'm talking about at that time of the month, they just saw that as deplorable, and they used it as an excuse. Oh, we can't have a woman up in the altar when she's in that sort of a state. I mean, this is the way they talked. And it was just abominable how Jesus had to come through Mary when he was born, covered with blood. And then I'm thinking in my mind, how did you come through? Was there a miracle that there was no blood? I mean, I try to, I guess, put myself seriously back into the minds of these men. And we can laugh and think it's funny, you know, what was done in the medieval ages, the Middle Ages. But come on, we're in 2022. And one of the big reasons, there's five reasons, biblical reasons, they say, that women cannot become priests is that women were not made in the image of God. This did not come from Jesus. This is cultural prejudice. And you even have Thomas Aquinas saying women were equal in the divine image in the extent that they were born with a brain. But then he went on in so many words to say, but it was the men that God gave the real intelligence to.
And yet it's the women who can create life.
Yes.
It's baffling to me. And of course, like you said, we can kind of giggle about it a little bit because we can see how ridiculous it is. I'm wondering, I've talked to a lot of people of faith who have expressed that during their studies, their religious, theological studies, that they experienced or they described having like a crisis of faith because of all of the things that they were learning. And the deeper they got into it, they found themselves in this place. Have you experienced that at all? And if so, how did you move beyond it?
I do have a crisis of faith with the hierarchy because, I mean, anyone can just examine what Jesus stood for love, for equality, for curing the sick. I mean, he was with the average, everyday person. He understood their condition, their sufferings. And in fact, what did he do? He openly spoke up against the authority types of his day. And I do today follow his model. And I don't feel I'm doing anything wrong. In fact, there was a law from Vatican II that said that it is all right for a lay person to speak up on matters of importance. And then I do follow Mary Mother, like in a sense in her footsteps, the talking for woman's ordination. But my crisis is definitely with the hierarchy, and it's not only on this woman ordination issue, it's on as well the pre-sexual abuse issue, which is ever there. It still hasn't gone away. And you have the bishops and you have cardinals that have basically for years looked the other way. And that's how this whole atrocity began and continued. And in Buffalo, New York, back in 2019, this Bishop Malone, reporters would ask, like, how many priests are involved in this abuse over our history of Buffalo. And it started out with 53, then it went up to 100, then it went up to 200. It was just lie after lie. And there was a priest that was taken out of service by the former bishop. Well, then this bishop comes in, and immediately that other priest that, you know, was taken out by the former bishop, he's reinstated. I mean, things like this just don't happen. Well, of course, he went back to his natural ways. So the bishop was moving him here and everywhere. Well, this bishop really got creative, and they showed on the news, they had an email, and he sent a letter, a glowing letter to a cruise ship line, you know, giving the glowing morals of this priest so that he could get a job on the cruise ship. In other words, get him out of Buffalo. I mean, this is, again, it's just unreal.
It really, really, really is. And when I think about this, so I love having these conversations. When I think about religion, I don't consider myself religious. I consider myself spiritual. And what we're talking about now is a big part of that, because I feel like when I hear you say the hierarchy, to me, and this, I'm not saying this is what you mean, so I'd love to hear your comment on this, but when I think of that, I think about the formalized structure of a religious organization, because what you describe as being your, you know, inspiration for living is what I think a lot of people feel like, that, you know, it's the good person, it's Jesus and what he actually did and who he was. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like these structures seem to get in the way and create their own almost business. And I don't say that to be offensive. So I'm just saying, like, that's just kind of how it feels to me. So I'm curious, Do you still feel like you align and identify as a Catholic, or have you moved more to a just overall spiritual?
I'll always be a Catholic. I guess it's in my roots.
Okay.
But I'm as well a very spiritual person. And because at times like this, when there's just such total insanity, and there are so many women that basically their trust has been betrayed. And people get upset. Okay, I can use the word lie. I can use the word betrayal. I can use the word misinformation. We all know what it means. And why is this wonderful information being withheld? Well, we know why it's being withheld, because they would have to admit that there's been this centuries-old scandal. And another word for scandal is omission. Omission of the truth. Now, back in, I don't even know, okay, I'm going to say this one thing from the Pope. And when you hear this, you understand where I'm coming from. I don't even understand why today we have to get into arguments if there should be woman priests or can there be woman priests. The church, the Catholic Church, answered this back in 1976. The Pope's own commission, it's called the Pontifical Biblical Commission, they came out with an emphatic statement saying they were looking into this question of woman priest. There is no biblical reason to prevent woman from being ordained. Hello, 1976. Now go back 2 years to 1974. There was an International Theological Commission, and they as well were looking into the whole issue of woman deacons. Well, Pope Francis, our current Pope in 26, opened up this whole new study of women deacons. And on that board was, I'm getting that mixed up with someone else. But anyway, they did this study and they went back and they found these three Greek studies, and they were all like unison together, that the information they found from that time, the ordination, whether it was a man or a woman, would be on the altar in the presence of a bishop. The bishop would lay hands on them and say prayers over them. They would each receive a stole around their neck, and each as well would receive the chalice to drink from. And the women were called deaconesses. So we know now there were women deacons. The church is saying there's no biblical reason to prevent women from becoming priest. There was, and you go back into the history, there were actually women bishops. And on the question of apostles, of course, we all know Mary Magdalene, after being called a very disrespectful name, her history got turned around, and now we actually have a feast day, July 22nd, for Mary Magdala. But she wasn't the only woman apostle. We all hear the story of Jesus obviously sending out the 12 male apostles. But another woman, Ida Ramming, this was really interesting. She found this term, it's called the concept of apostleship. What does that mean? Who is an apostle? It's anyone who is divinely and officially sent out, either by the risen one or by the community. So then that gives credence when you go through the biblical research and you find beyond Mary Magdalene, there was Susanna. There was the woman at the tomb. There was Nino. And then another term, Junia, was referenced for years as being a male, and no, that was a woman. So there's all these women in priestly positions with Mary, of course, which she should. She's up at the top. And I guess I just don't understand why the church cannot even follow their own findings. And they prevent such animosity between Catholics.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things in this book, and something that you said earlier, is like the goal is to help, well, not uncover, but share the truth. And something that I've come to understand very deeply is that the truth feels very flexible. And I think we all want to think of things as very black and white, which I think, in my opinion, is why when you present them with something new that doesn't feel like what they understand, why people will want to reject it so much. But the reason why I feel like, in my opinion, the truth feels flexible is because we're always getting it from someone's perspective. And I believe you touched on this in the book too, but you talked about the fact that it's been happening so long that the texts that are preserved are the ones that they've chosen to preserve, right? The ones that they've chosen and that fall in line with their, I was going to say agenda, but essentially on their theory of history they want to tell. Mm-hmm. So my question is, in doing the research that you've done and all the time you spent on this, how do you go about determining what you really feel is actually true?
Well, I definitely, after reading John Vinsgard's book, you know, and getting the truth out of it, that Mary definitely, you know, was a woman priest. The problem is that the church, after Jesus died, obviously when Jesus was alive, there never was canon law. Canon law is man-made law. And that's where this whole problem came in, because you had these men with these absurd ideas of woman, keeping woman in their place, and going back to, I mentioned about the biblical reasons why women can't be priest. The first one we went into about the woman not being made, and that was proven. This is all cultural prejudice. As well, when Paul said that woman couldn't teach. Believe it or not, at that same time in the culture, there was a law, and it basically went into this condition that women were so feeble-minded and emotionally unstable that they cannot be out in the public teaching. Oh, can you imagine a woman out there in public? But again, this is all cultural prejudice. We go back to Adam and Eve and the belief that Eve carries the sin. So, of course, women inherit that sin. And if women have sinned, they obviously can't be the most stellar candidates for the priesthood. But miraculously, there were perfect candidates within the church, and those were the men. And then we've all heard that Jesus sent out the 12 male apostles. And somehow this was meant to project that he never wanted to have a woman as priest. And at that time, this was in an ancient Israel, and John Vinsgard said, Jesus had to work within the community and the culture he lived, and it was very much patristic. And can you imagine if Jesus ever tried to put women in there? He would have been ran over some cliff. But he did that more as a representation of the new Israel. But then you had men from centuries ahead with their ideas of woman inferiority came this idea. They projected their ideas onto Jesus. And they took, seeing what Jesus did there, that, you know, women weren't named. Well, then this is like almost perfect. Well, this is a reason why women can't be priest. And then the last one was that Jesus was a male. So, of course, woman cannot be up on the altar. And again, this is cultural prejudice. Mary was right up on the altar. She was known also as a sacrificial priest, which means she did everything. She was a part of the consecration. And there was a French painting. This was back in the 15th century. And it showed Mary giving communion to a pope. But the pope at that time wore a hat called a tiara, and it showed the pope kneeling, and that hat was over, the tiara was over on the side, and Mary was there like with the chalice and distributing communion, and then on the side was an angel frowning, looking at the pope. So, I mean, it was interesting, you know, when you get a view like that.
Isn't it amazing? So when you really start to dig into things, you do find such interesting pieces of information. Were there any, or I should say, because I'm sure there were, when you started digging into this, what were some of the biggest things that you can remember thinking, wow, and like a revelation for you when you're doing this research?
The first one was when I read about Mary being a priest. I just threw the book up in the air, and then I grabbed it again. And did I just see what I read? And I also found it fascinating. Back in the 5th century at the Council of Chalcedon, that it was brought out that as far as ordination went, if the bishop ever interfered with the ordination, then that ordination would be null and void. In other words, the local community had more power to ordain someone. And I thought, my God, that's what we need today. We need the local communities, parishes. I mean, it would just be so much more personable. And let's face it now, with the ever-growing priest shortage.
You've faced, in the work that you do, I want to use the word hate, and I'm not sure if that's appropriate. You faced backlash, very negative backlash from your own community, from your own church, from people that should be open and willing to have a conversation with you because they are intimately part of your community. What would you share about those experiences?
Well, it was funny. I was just picketing again this past Saturday. There were two men that were going to be ordained. And many Catholics don't realize, well, what's the connection? You know, this isn't the place for you to be here. These men are being ordained. Women have no place in this. But this year, there was a woman that parked her car, and I could just tell. That's one thing. You can really gauge the emotions. You can tell as people are approaching. And some people think when we're picketing, we're shouting. No, we're just standing there letting our signs say what we have to say. And you know, it's very quiet, other than when some people come and things, they get a little excited. So I could see the lady didn't look pleased. So I said, good morning. And she looks at me and she says, you should be ashamed of yourself. This is just so disheartening. These men this morning are going to be married to Christ through the priesthood. And this is disheartening. And I said, well, yes, it is embarrassing that the Catholic Church is not allowing any woman today to be in this procession and to walk in the footsteps of Mary or any of the other former woman priests. And then she looks at me and, oh, this was really condescending. What are you talking about? I have a doctorate in theology. I mean, that's just how condescending she was. And this isn't the truth. And I carry a sign. There's wonderful Catholic groups like Call to Action, Future Church, Women's Ordination. And Women's Ordination had in warning, where are all the women priests? And then it had about four pictures, and it had missing, and it would have like the name Phoebe and the century, you know, that she was a deacon and someone else was a priest, and a bishop, a deacon. And I said, here's the proof right here. And she just shook her head and basically went into church in a huff. And it is so sad because it's like ironclad, whatever this is, that the hierarchy, they still believe the hierarchy told me this, and whoever else says one iota of difference, and or they'll use, I shouldn't say the Bible card, but it's true. Those that do ask, which I'm glad to answer questions, you know, that's the only way people can, you know, see maybe a different view. Well, where in the Bible is this? I'm confused. And I said, oh, no, ma'am. I said, this comes from biblical research. Well, that means nothing. So, I mean, it's so sad because I want these Catholics to know what they're missing out on.
What would be your ultimate goal with sharing? You know, what would be your vision of the future of the church that you grew up with and love?
Well, I figure if enough Catholics finally find out the truth that they have been misinformed and know the role of Mary, it would be a real shot in the arm to our church. Where is the religious heritage for women? There is no religious heritage. That's been wiped out. If you're a boy, you've always seen men up on the altar. And like, I happen to be Irish, and in Irish families, it would go from one generation to another. Christopher would maybe be a priest. Sean would be a bishop. And then if a few families had a cardinal, Ryan was a cardinal. But okay, let's go to this side. Where are in the women's families? Who was a priest? Who was a bishop? Obviously, there's nothing. But we know now that that heritage was there. And Pope Francis has said we have to start a new theology for women. Well, actually, we have to revive that old theology that was there and basically through the years became hidden. And now, right after the church decides centuries ago something's going to be knocked off, obviously, the scribes in this sense would not have to write about it. So in a sense, it gets hidden. But back in 2000, this Judy Eisen brought up that there were three biblical studies all on ordination of woman. So the hierarchy would have certainly heard about that. So they can't say that they don't know, you know, what's going on here. And even in Vatican II, there was an Article 29 in the Constitution on the Church in the modern world, and it was telling us that there should be no radical, no matter sexual prejudice of any type. Well, we know where that went. You know, and people would say, well, who's this lady? That's how she's doing is, you know, really giving it to the Catholic Church. But how can our church ever go back? And you were saying like a business, and it's truthful. Up to the time of this awful sexual abuse, the money that was rolling into the Catholic Church, and let's face it, if it's being run more like a business, and again, the individuals in there aren't really following Jesus's ministry, well, then you're missing a lot.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There is a lot. So I do want to mention one more time and point everybody back to Scandal in the Shadows, which is your book. And then are you ready for the final three questions?
I'll try to.
Okay. It's not scary. I just try to make it dramatic.
Yes, it was.
Okay. So in this show, I hope to get people to really start thinking and make it something that they can take action on. So at the end, I always ask my guest to share one very small thing that everyone listening can do today to challenge what they think they know about history. So maybe that's them getting curious if there's a video they can watch, just something that would trigger some deeper curiosity.
Well, a woman's ordination conference had videos out, and there was one now, the name eludes me, but you can find it over at their website. And it was over in Rome, and it was all about different quotes like that the popes have said in regard to women being priests. And then it would show a woman actually going into a cathedral over there. And then it would show like the men, you know, they were dressed in their priestly attire, but that was a real good one that would, it's a man's world, I believe it was called.
Okay. So, I can probably find that and link that in the show notes. So just if they were to take a look at this video, that might be helpful to kind of trigger some more interest anyways.
Yes, definitely.
All right. And what are five words that you would use to describe your current self? Doesn't have to be a sentence, just five words.
Oh, me, myself, and I. No, no. I'm giving my chance to get here to figure this one out. Genuine, honest, heartfelt, persistent. I can't think of anything else.
Well, that's four. We got at least four, so that's good. And then where would you like the audience to go to connect with you, to learn more, to get your book, all of those things?
Yes, they can get my book at Amazon.com. And my website is yourradicaltruth.com, yourradicaltruth.com. And there is a chapter on there that you can click on and read free.
Okay, excellent. And I'll make sure to put that in the show notes. I appreciate you taking the time to chat and share your experience and the information that you found. I always think it's valuable to expand our minds to new information.
Well, thank you, Heather. This has really been a very engaging and pleasurable conversation.
Thank you, as always, for listening in today. The goal is to inspire you to think more deeply, and I really hope today's conversation with Margaret did just that. I love these conversations, even as someone who is self-proclaimed non-religious and does not tie myself to a specific religion. These are the most fascinating because this delves into, honestly, the deepest structure of our society and societies at large and our history as a humanity. It plays a huge role. So I find it fascinating. Please do check the show notes for links on how to connect with Margaret, get her book, and also for a link to the YouTube video that she did mention. As a reminder, the thoughts and opinions that we share today, they're our own. We encourage you to do your own research and come to your own fact-based conclusions. Connect with Diversity on Fire on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Diversity on Fire. If you enjoy this show and or any of our episodes, I would so appreciate a little love, 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcast or whatever platform you listen on that allows you to do reviews. Don't forget to hit subscribe wherever you're listening now so you never miss an episode. Share the show with everyone you know so they can join in these important conversations. And as always, until next time, don't forget to check your bias and keep the conversations going.